In a way, light pollution probably ought to be called night pollution, because it's really the pollution of the darkness and of natural nighttime with excessive artificial light, which really wasn't a problem 150 years ago. But as lighting technologies have allowed us to create brighter and brighter lights, and as populations and cities have grown and commerce has expanded, our world has gotten measurably brighter as seen from space and as seen from Earth. And with that comes a number of alarming effects that we are only beginning to understand the full extent of today. And these range from the ways in which artificial light affects our ability to do science and astronomy and learn about the universe beyond, to ecological impacts associated with the way light disrupts habitat, all the way down the line to the way in which artificial light might be affecting humans physiologically by disrupting our circadian rhythms. You're right when you suggest that light pollution has not been immediately on everybody's radar screen in the past. And I think the role of our film, The City Dark, is to try and introduce people to the idea that we might be overlighting our world, and in the process, losing not only all that we gain as scientists and all that we gain as healthy individuals from a natural light-dark cycle, but also we might be losing something a little more hard to pin down, our connection to the stars and to the night sky. And that's what the film begins to explore.
How much research is actually out there on this topic? And how much material did you have to work with?
Well, the film is about 80 minutes long in its feature-length form. But we filmed probably 250 to 300 hours of footage of scientists and writers and thinkers and doctors and chronobiologists all around the country and to a limited extent all around the world. And there's an amazing wealth of information, much of it available through an organization called the International Dark Sky Association, darksky.org, that is collecting a lot of the research associated with the way we light our world and disrupt our darkness and making it available to the public. So while much of the research, for example, research associated with circadian rhythms and how humans might be at risk of developing certain cancers as a result of a disrupted light-dark cycle, while much of that research is very much evolving and somewhat young, there is enormous interest in this topic across all disciplines.
Now, the documentary is divided into 6 chapters. There's loss of night sky, there's the effects on nature, night shifts, why we light, and astrophilia. And I think I missed one. How easy or difficult was it to compartmentalize all the information you had in these 6 categories?
The film does unfold in these chapters, and it is therefore somewhat essay-like in its form as we move roughly from one topic to the next. But narratively, it's very much a journey, and it chronicles my journey as a filmmaker, learning more and more about this topic. So we do set out from New York City early on in the film to find out the implications of spreading artificial light, and that's what brings us to all corners of the globe, really, in exploring this issue. And the threads that I think connect all of these chapters are these twin questions of how does light pollution affect our world in a physical way, in a physiological way, in a way that we can measure, in a way that we can understand as scientists. And then also, how does light pollution and the loss of the night sky and the loss of our connection to the universe affect us more psychologically, more spiritually, more culturally? What do we lose as a people when we don't see how big the universe really is? And those questions connect all of these 6 disparate chapters that chronicle our journey to understand light at night.
Now, two of my favorite parts in the documentary were, one was where you talk to this man who has a collection, who runs a shop of light bulbs, and he actually has two or three bulbs that Edison made.
Yeah, we visited a fellow who runs a fascinating light bulb, kind of specialty light bulb supply store in Hackensack, New Jersey, and he pulled out of a dusty drawer these beautiful old bulbs from the time of Thomas Edison. I think one of them was an original Edison light bulb. And when he plugged that light bulb in, it still worked. It still glowed, that warm glow. I mean, for me, helps explain why we've become so enamored with light. It's so beautiful, and there's so much you can do with it, and it's so inviting. You know, it probably has roots in our love of the campfire or something.
Another favorite part of mine was when the Florida beach turtles, how they get disoriented, and instead of moving toward the ocean, they move toward city lights. In a very subtle way, it was so powerful. I was almost rooting for these baby turtles. So yeah. Which were your favorite parts of the documentary?
Well, it's hard to pick a favorite in a film like this. I will say I really enjoyed spending time with astronomers and astrophysicists who are trying to peer very deeply into outer space, because on the one hand, they were very comfortable talking about these unbelievably complex ideas, frontiers of astrophysics, like dark matter, dark energy. I mean, they're exploring the very stuff of the universe, the hidden matter that drives everything around us. And on the other hand, most of the scientists I spoke to were also very willing to try and explain in less technical terms what the stars mean to them and why they're so fascinated with exploring outer space. And it's actually something that a lot of us have a hard time putting into words. And that's something I've seen in the distribution of the film as we've been pushing it out from film festivals through our theatrical premiere in New York and soon on public television this summer on PBS's show POV, is that when we share the film with folks, we often hear a lot of responses about when people first saw the Milky Way, you know, when they first stepped outside of a city and saw our galaxy with hundreds of billions of stars, and try to articulate what that means and how we value that. I think that challenge to express how we value something like the stars is very central to this issue, and it's very similar to how we talk about nature and how we value the environment. How do you put a price tag on a walk on the beach or a hike in the mountains? I think it's similar with the night sky.
Another thing that I really liked about the documentary was that you also talked about the importance of light and how that has been used in cultures throughout the world. Was the ambivalence deliberate, or, you know, something that was just a consequence of putting these all parts of the puzzle together?
I think the ambivalence I felt and still feel is very honest, and I think it's something that some level took me by surprise after working on the film for a few years, was my own realization of how much I came to love the sight of the city skyline and love living in the city. And part of that is the way it looks and it being able to go out at night and feel like you're in a vibrant environment where you can see your way and feel safe and gain everything that we gain from lighting our world. So I came to feel, though, that we can have that, but we can also not waste so much money and so much energy and disrupt so many ecosystems and disrupt our own circadian rhythms with light trespassing into our bedroom windows, and maybe even bring back some more stars to the night sky. And I think that's as important to do in a big city as it is out in the countryside. I do think there's something very important about preserving our kind of darkest places as these special reserves and preserves, as places where you can see a truly, truly dark sky. But I also think we need to pay attention to the fact that so many young people are now growing up in urban environments. And while we should make great efforts to truck them out to the wilderness, I think there's also something to be gained from bringing back more stars to our city skies, just as there's something to be gained by cleaning up our rivers and bringing back more trees to our city streets.
Now, for me, the documentary not only raises some practical questions, but also some philosophical questions about my place in this universe. What questions do you want your viewers to ask after they've watched the documentary?
I hope that viewers see the film and remember to look up more, no matter where they live. I think that's something that we can forget to do when there's not too much to see when you look up. But I think the more we look up, maybe the more we'll notice that we can retool our lights, and that they're not built appropriately. And then hopefully the more we look up, we can remember that we are on a planet in a great big universe, and that that perspective is really valuable. And I hope that viewers ask themselves, what does that perspective mean and where does it leave us? You know, this idea that we are on a very unique water-covered planet in a pretty big universe that is mostly cold, empty space. And what does that tell us about how we should steward this place and what we should do with our time on it? And I also think it's looking up at the night sky is an opportunity to imagine exploring beyond this planet, and I think that that is a call to science in the 21st century. And as we can engage more young people in thinking about the stars, I think we can engage more people in the spirit of discovery and science and exploration, which are tremendous drivers not only for the human race, but also for our economy. So I think all those issues are, in a way, tied up with light pollution and the loss of the night sky. The more we can bring stars back, I think the more we can bring back all that comes with it.